janefinch.com.
Good evening. Bonsoir. Kính chào quý vị. My name is Ngoc Vo, Control Affairs Commissioner of the Vietnamese Canadian Federation. On behalf of the organizing committee, thank you for being here today. Thay mặt ban tổ chức, chúng tôi xin cảm ơn quý vị đã đến tham dự sinh hoạt hướng nghiệp đặc biệt ngày hôm nay, sinh hoạt cuối cùng trong năm sinh hoạt tháng di sản Á Châu do Liên hội Người Việt, Trung tâm Người Việt và các hội đoàn vùng Ottawa tổ chức. Depuis 2007, la Fédération vietnamienne et le Centre vietnamien du Canada, ainsi que les autres organisations vietnamiennes à Ottawa, ont participé au mois du patrimoine asiatique, avec des activités annuelles, comme la journée de la culture vietnamienne, mais aussi d'autres plus uniques, comme la rencontre avec l'écrivaine Kim Thuy en 2011, le concert au Centre national des arts, et la rencontre aujourd'hui avec des personnalités du monde artistique. Our series of events would not be possible to organize without the financial support of the Ministry of Tourism and Culture of Ontario, Scotiabank, Dr. An Ninh Nguyen and Vu Nguyen, as well as other sponsors. In particular, for today's event off the beaten track, we are grateful to have the financial support of Citizenship and Immigration Canada. Thank you to all our funders and sponsors. This project began when I met Andy Tay and back in September at a book launch in Montreal. He did not know that when he gave me his business card that day, it would be the start of a series of emails and phone calls that I hope did not annoy him too much. Thank you, Andy, for trusting me. The idea of this project has been on our mind for a very long time. Being someone with a conventional career myself, I always feel that those who, unlike me, have decided to challenge common Asian perceptions and sometimes family and peer pressure to get into the arts, these people are pioneers because they have taken a less traveled road. Ils sont hors des sentiers battus. For most Asians, coming from war-torn countries where poverty is a fact of life, education is the way to get out of that circle, and being in Canada and other developed countries give them that opportunity. So most of them will choose secure careers, well-paid, in the science, healthcare, business, and technology fields, which is nothing to be ashamed of, especially when your skills are there and you are happy with your choice. But for others who have a calling for the arts, for music, for dance, for fashion, for cinema, it can be a tough moment when you submit your college or university application. We would like to thank all the people and organizations who have contributed to today's event. Andy Tay and Lole Company, the Fashion Show Team, Peter Liu and the Bamboo Groove, Minh Nguyen, Pon Nguyen for the exhibits, Lin Sima of Public Works Ministry, Simi Lipin from CIC, New Look Team, our technician Rob Petachuk, William Lau, Minh Nguyen and Bat Mai Nguyen, Ai Cheng, who helped with the promotion, as well as on the volunteers in the hospitality, reception and security teams. We could not do this without your collaboration and support. Nous sommes donc très heureux que ce projet, qui a débuté en septembre dernier lors de la rencontre avec Andy à Montréal, se réalise aujourd'hui avec la participation de nos panélistes et votre participation. Je tiens à remercier sincèrement tous nos panélistes qui ont accepté de participer à cet événement. Andy Tay, Peter Liu, William Liao, Minh Nguyen, Pon Nguyen et Amanda Peria. Je vais maintenant présenter notre modérateur William Liao, une personne respectée du monde des arts, du théâtre et de la danse. Canada's premier Peking opera artist William Liao is a refined performer, dynamic educator, and distinguished cultural worker. Raised in Montreal, the graduate from Toronto York University Master of Fine Arts program was trained in both Chinese traditional dance and Western classical ballet. William was the founder and artistic director of the Montreal Society of Chinese Performing Arts and the Lytton Pear Garden Collective. He had developed and promoted the richness of Chinese dance and opera to a wide range of audiences nationally across Canada, as well as mentor a new generation of cultural workers. He had performed internationally in North America, Europe, and Asia. William is a leader and pioneer in the world of dance in Canada and beyond, and we are grateful that he has agreed to be our moderator today, despite his busy schedule. Thank you, William, and welcome on stage.
Thank you, merci.
Alors, bonsoir tout le monde. Je m'appelle William, je suis votre modérateur pour cette forum de discussion avec cinq artistes. Alors, on va présenter les artistes. We are going to present the artists first. We'll invite the furthest, which is from Toronto, Mr. Paul Nguyen, who is a filmmaker. Please welcome. And there's no priority sitting. You can just sit anywhere. Okay. prochainement, nous accueillons Monsieur Andy T. An, qui est designer de à la mode de Montréal. Woohoo! We just saw the fashion show. It was so wonderful. Okay. Then we have, of course, Amanda Parija from Ottawa, who is a public policy maker, researcher, and a strong advocate for the arts. Please welcome her. Our next lovely lady is Min Nui, who is a visual artist, and some of her work you've seen. She showed you a little sample, a taste of her art, in the foyer. So if you miss it, please check it out again. It's amazing. Please welcome Min Nguyen. Last but not least, our famous singer, jazz singer, Peter Liu from Ottawa. You heard his wonderful singing. Please welcome him. Well, actually, this is a forum that is very informal, okay? So we don't have any set agenda. We're not going to do anything scary, okay? So please relax. Okay, so thanks, the organizer, Nork and Lulu, bringing us together. This is a rare opportunity for us, actually, to meet each other, to actually discuss this type of thing in front of you. And we would like to hear your input, and like to have a discourse with you, not just among us. But I guess first we should speak about ourselves first. So instead of reading out their wonderful bio, I'm going to ask each one of them to introduce themselves to you. How about that? And yes. So I guess on top of that, I would like to ask one question is that, how did you get here? Not by flight or by train, okay? What I meant is in terms of your artistic pursuit. Huh? So maybe what I'm going to ask, actually, maybe Paul will start off this question. First, introduce us to you and your calling in life.
Well, thank you, William. Good evening, everyone. My name is Paul Nguyen. I'm from Toronto. I'm actually from a community called Jane and Finch, and it's a small intersection north of Toronto, and you may have heard of it. It's a pretty famous area in Canada. But basically, how I got into film and art was actually by accident. You know, in Jane and Finch, a lot of kids, they get into negative things because there's not much to do. So a lot of people can get involved easily into gangs or, you know, nonsense. But I was lucky I had a neighbor who's a black kid by the name of Mark, and he's my best friend. And when I was a kid, he was bored one day. We wanted to just make movies, you know, home movies in Jane Finch area, like on a rooftops or, you know, cops and robbers movies. So I got into it by accident, and basically it stuck with me through life. And I found that, I mean, not just being creative but telling a story, but through the video camera, I was able to find my own voice and amplify that through the internet, because to be honest, I'm a shy and quiet kid. I still am. I actually don't want to be up here right now. But you know, it's been a really good tool for me, and especially with the internet, and now how anybody can basically speak their mind and be heard. So that's where we are today, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. C'est une forum bilingue, alors peut-être Andy, est-ce que vous voulez parler quelque chose?
Hi, everybody, bonsoir. Mon nom c'est Andy Tehan. So what's your first question again?
C'est vraiment le parcours artistique.
Oh, my influence, artistic influence. Wow. You want me to take...
Just introduce yourself first, okay. Even though we know you.
Introduce myself. my God. I didn't, like you, I didn't jump into this business by accident, but I think that I dreamed this career for a long time. I remember when I, back in Vietnam, I think that I opened a book for my aunts, and the first thing I saw was all these haute couture creation from Dior. And I remember my grandmother usually has that, like, makeup, perfume, and by Chanel and Dior, and it's always like, I always questioning what is that. And honestly, I didn't think this is a career opportunity, and I didn't think that this was existing, because you all know, in Vietnam, we all have like a tailor who making more custom-made suit and clothes or elsewhere, but never think that is they have a designer behind it. So when I arrived in Canada, in Montreal, of course, like everybody else in the Asian community, we always push to studying more science or all this like more respectful career. And actually, I have a degree in science.
Multi-talented.
Honestly, I think that I come in and. The first time I heard it was to my aunt, actually, because that she explained it to me that designer actually is a career and you can make a living out of it. So honestly, I didn't dream to come. You know, I just want to do what I like, but I never think that this is bring me up to what I am today. I think that make it short, I think that honestly, I play with clothes. I don't make clothes, honestly. So I usually make my own clothes when I was in high school and in college. So uncreated by my friends and the conseiller en orientation. I don't know how you guys say it in English here. But he said that you should make a career out of it. And I think that, okay, so that if that is a career choice, I will do it. Against the will of my grandma, of course, because she lived in Toronto, and with all the pressure that she put it on my two sisters, who's much older than me, and she telling you have to get him out of that idea of being a designer. So, but you can see, they didn't success at all in that point. So, I went to college, to La Salle College, and my life started from there.
Wonderful, wonderful story. What about Min? Did you just wake up one day and decided to be a visual artist, or what happened?
Not at all, actually. My story actually began in Vietnam as well, like Andy. When I was around 8 years old, I purchased a biography on Leonardo da Vinci, and his creative life really inspired me, but not into visual arts. Into the sciences, but I was also good in visual art as well. So throughout high school and even junior high, my teachers tried to encourage me to get into the fine arts, but I didn't think much of it because I don't know why. Maybe parent pressures, but in part I value science more. So I started my bachelor degree in biochemistry. And
surprising.
Actually, there's some relation between sciences and art. So
for sure.
Definitely. Even the humanities as well. And so I think after my first year, I realized that I just don't have the temperament to be a research scientist. I get bored quickly. So I am interested in projects happening. It has to end at a certain point, not my whole life to do the research. So and so I kind of wander a bit and try to decide what would be good for me. And I move from philosophy to psychology to sociology, architecture, and finally landed in visual art. And visual arts hit a strong note with me because I think it was around that time that I started to question my own identity as a Canadian. I did not feel belong at all. In part, possibly because of the a few racial and cultural prejudices that I experienced. And visual arts became, like, to be an artist is to be able to express your feelings through mediums. And my art at the time allowed me to do that, to make sense of my belongings in Canada. And that's how it started.
Oh, very powerful. Thank you. Well, now Min doesn't like to be a researcher, but I have someone on this panel who's passionate about research. Amanda.
Well, I knew I was the nerd, but I didn't realize I was also boring. I'm only teasing Min. So I am a public policy researcher, and that is one of the hats that I wear. But I'm actually here tonight as the president of Media Action, which is a nonprofit that I do a lot of volunteer work with. And Media Action works to promote gender equity in the media. And one of the goals of Media Action is actually also to promote diversity in the media. So we've done a fair bit of work in this area, and we did a report where we looked at 6 television shows, and we looked to see what diversity there was. As Anne was saying to me earlier, we looked to see what charter rights and freedoms were being represented in the shows that we looked at. So was there representation of gender? Was there representation of diversity? What did class look like? Religion, and so on and so forth. Anyway, so I'm wearing that hat as I sit on this panel, nerdily in awe of my colleagues here who are talking about all of their other talents. So I'll be the sober second thought, I guess, as we're talking on this panel tonight. Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Now, and we went to a CBC Radio interview this morning, and I had the pleasure of hearing Peter's story about how you become a musician, especially a jazz musician. I would like you to share with our audience and also talk a little bit about, we talk about representation. How come you have this first Asian musician group in Ottawa?
Yeah, thank you very much. My background is ethnically, I'm Chinese. My parents were born in China, and I was born in New York City, and then I moved up to Ottawa in 1998. But I have to say, the story that I told is that I grew up in a pretty probably typical but very traditional Asian family, where my dad was extremely let's put it this way, controlling. Is that a nice word to
any
use?
Any identification out there, Asian daddy?
And I think that my life growing up was all about, achievement and, getting, if I got a 99, why didn't I get 100? The typical stuff that you hear about. So there's a lot of pressure growing up on achievement and achievement and achievement. And then when I went to university, I had a huge fight with my dad about what to study, because he did not want me. I was interested in a lot of different things and I wasn't focused. But as I did more schooling, I realized that I was really drawn to psychology. That was really my love. I did love music as well, but I didn't dare bring that up to my dad, because I think he would have had a heart attack if I told him I wanted to be a musician. But when I told him I was wanting to be a psychologist, he thought that was ridiculous, and he tried to persuade me to do something like engineering. He was an engineer, so he wanted me to follow in his footstep and do something practical. But I did fight him on that, because I didn't have any interest in it at all, and I wasn't even that good at it. So I'm glad I went down psychology road. But after I finally became a psychologist, my dad finally turned it around. And if you met him now and ask him about it, he'll tell you it was his idea. Oh, yeah, my dad's like that. So he's pretty proud now, but it's all his idea. But and then since I've been doing the music, music's been a big part of my life in the last 6 years, because I've always dreamed of it, but I never allowed myself to really pursue it seriously because of my background. But I think once I actually became a psychologist, I really realized that I needed something else to express myself. And once I found music, there's no going back, because I love it so much. And it's really turned into a second career for me.
Well, thank you for bringing this wonderful voice to us.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, Actually, the next question is, of course, like a lot of parents, because they're not like really against you being an artist, but they're worried about you, right? They want you to get some sort of money, you know, buy a house, get a car, and those type of thing, right? So I remember when I went, and of course, my father would say, "Are you crazy? You know, like what about school? You know, this and that, right?" So I understand that there is a balance between like your passion, and then you're getting some sort of money to survive, because no matter how much you have passion, you still have to pay the rent, right? You still have to, like, art is not cheap. You have to invest, you have to learn, you have to, you know, it's a lot of investment, okay? All the glamorous thing you saw on stage is a lot of money invested at the back, okay? So I'm going to start with Min. How do you balance this in terms of your, you know, passion and having a comfortable life?
Comfortable, not yet. The balancing, it's very cyclical. It varies from year to year, situation to situation. So I have to be very adaptable. And
can you explain more? How do you adapt?
Learn problem solving. For instance, if my money's run up by the end of this month, what do I need to do, you know, to raise money and still have time to make art? So contract jobs, commission jobs, things like that.
Cool. Anybody else want to talk about this?
Well, I think it's a lot of to talk about it, because especially when we choose this path, I think that this is a sacrifice, a lot of sacrifice, I think. Well, you know, what I learned from my experience is I cannot say in Vietnam we come from a wealthy family, and after that we all know the 75, when the regime was falling down, we go to... you know, the deep hole. It's the blackness of it. So we went into that for 7 years before we can get out of the country and then come to Montreal. So at 18 years old, and I decided to live my own life. And so I decided to support my own self. So it means that, you know, I'm going to school, to college for science, and at night, I work at the busboy in the restaurant for 2 years to support myself. So I think that is the path that you learn, and I think that as Asian people, I think that we have that kind of strength to push us to a lot of things, and, you know, we always come up with a survival skill kind of thing. So that, I think that's how that I understand when we're choosing to be an artist or to express ourselves for another way without any safety net in front of us. And you know what? And even that, because my family come here with like two empty hands also, you cannot like rely to them also, so you have to support yourself. So I think that is the only way and, you know, to do it, I think, and they have to push you to go a little bit further every day, I think.
No, it's a good comment, because a lot of the time, especially the first immigrant, right, that arrive in Canada, a lot of them are really wanting to establish a life and, you know, have, what about your experience, Paul? Like, do you work this full time or?
Well, to the young people in the audience, you got to just find a passion, and basically, you know, when you're doing something you like, it's like you're living, you're breathing it. And I mean, you can work, you can go to school, you can juggle all those things. For the young people, maybe you should just relax on the Xbox a little bit. You know, don't go clubbing, cut down your hours on Facebook. I mean, there's a lot of hours in the day that you can actually get a lot done. So it's about being efficient and setting priorities and just chasing your passion. So you can do it. There's a lot of hours in the day, and there's no excuses that you can make, because there's a lot of people that have followed their dreams and have, you know, been able to pursue them. So you guys can do it too.
Okay, that sounds good. You know, I learned a lot. So next time when you see me doing something else, you know, these are all the advice from my panelists. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I guess I'm a little bit different than some of the panelists here because I didn't devote my career to the arts, even though I'm kind of doing both simultaneously. But I have to say, my message to folks is that it's never too late to learn things. It's never, ever too late. And I have to just talk about my mom for a second, as opposed to my dad.
Is she here? Wait.
No, she's not. I wish she was here. I love my mom, and she's not controlling. Thank goodness. My mom is a very sweet person, but she started playing piano in her 50s, and now she's about 70-something. And she is really good now. And so, I mean, she was an inspiration to me because she did that. And actually, that was one of the reasons why I started really getting serious about singing, because I just realized, wow, if she can do it, I can do it. And I think that I think we have oftentimes a lot of barriers in our head that arts are for other people. You know, they're for these special, talented, you know, these, I don't know, gods and goddesses somewhere just bestow these things on you, and you're going to be the good ones.
Oh, you destroy my dream. I thought I'm a goddess and stuff. Okay, I'm not.
That's funny. But no, I think that's in all of us, because we all have talents, and if we spend time and make space for that in our lives to develop, it can grow into a career.
Thank you. Guys, thank you. Amanda, what about you? Like, as a policy, like, is that a full-time thing? It's like,
well,
you can have a life as a policymaker?
Unbelievably, I do spend a lot of time working at research, but obviously I have time to do other things because I'm here talking about other things today. I actually wanted to build on what Peter was saying about looking to others for inspiration. And if I can just refer to this research for a second, what we've found is that, especially for visible minorities, when you look at television, you don't often see yourself reflected there, not very much. Even now, in 2009, where we just did research, we're not seeing ourselves reflected there. So it's really hard to get motivated to say, I want to have a career on television, because you're not seeing yourself there already. And that's, I think that's a real problem, and that's why it's really important to have role models.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Role model is important. But a lot of the time, as I grew up, I don't see that many role model.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, like, I also rely on other kind of, like, so-called artists of color, even though they're not, like, Chinese, but
yep.
I see them as my role model. Because one time, I just, on the side, tell you a little story. I was at York University, and then, you know, I was studying, like, you know, regular, like, dance history, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly, I saw this Indian woman with all her beautiful sari, you know, at the office. I said, what's this Indian woman doing here? And then my professor go, oh, my God, you don't know her? She's Dr. Menaka Taka. She's a famous Indian dancer. Then I thought, oh, my God, if she could be a dancer, I could be one too. So it just kind of inspired me, even though I don't do the same art form, but, like, you know, seeing other role model that you guys are doing, like Asian fashion designer in Canada, you know, jazz singer in Canada. Like, you know, it just inspires us. But what are your challenges? There must be some challenges in your pursuit beside money. Okay, let's not talk about money. Beside money. Peter.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to say the biggest challenges that I have they've always been internal. They've always been inside myself. I think that being a performer, a music performer, pushes you to break the boundaries of who you think you are all the time. Because that, especially in jazz, because it's a creative, improvisational form of music, you are really pushed to challenge who you are and what you think you can do and what you can think you can learn. And I think that just that experience is always, I guess, trying to push me to grow and to evolve. But sometimes I get pulled back. Sometimes I just get, oh, I can't do it. And then I have to push myself to try something new or to try to build on some aspect of performance or skill or maybe take a class or something to work on my vocal technique. But it's not really, I find that it's never ending, that push-pull of I want to grow, I want to pull back, I'm afraid, I want to push forward, I'm afraid.
Is it the same for you, Paul?
Well, the challenges of art, I mean the typical Asian parents, you know, don't get into the arts. Actually, here as a filmmaker, but I consider myself more of a community activist and, you know, involved in those kind of things. And even pursuing those kind of things, you know, parents would push back because they don't want you to get involved. Because they come from the old country, they don't want to, you know, fight the system too much or get locked up and thrown and, you know, they throw away the key, right? But, you know, in Jane and Finch, right, there's a lot of social issues there. So, you know, to stand up and speak out and to challenge the system and to voice your opinions, that can be also, you know, very risky. So, but I feel like, you know, you have a, you know, life is but precious, it's short, and you should, you know, be true to yourself. And, you know, if you have something to say, like, express it honestly, and that's the most important thing.
Andy? Oh, challenge in my field, yeah, there's a lot of challenge. We're facing the...
Highlight.
Yeah, I think it's just, my God, what can I say? Every day is a challenge in that kind of job because you always have to be, you know, I think it's with my personality, I'm a dreamer, so, you know, I always never have my 2 feet down the on earth. Not when I have a reputation when I was a kid, but challenge, I see the challenge at how you can step up or how you can go better the day before, and that what every, or I'm designing or I'm doing everything is every season or, in our fields is every season. Each collection is a challenge. Then when you finish one, you have to think, what is the next one that I'm doing so to I can top it? And the more successful you have, is more challenge that you do on your shoulder, because everybody, you know, in this world, everybody expecting you more and more every day. So I think that is the challenge. And I think that the biggest challenge for me in the past 2 years is stepping down a little bit, like slowing down. So to have time for myself, have time to rethink what is my next step is. So I think that is hard. It's hard as a challenge, as and people like me. But I think in the career field, I was lucky enough that I was the first day that I saw, I was accepted right away. So it's not like, you know, I have to fight to have my place. I have that question come a lot to me from the young Asian, I wouldn't say kids, but like teenager. Like, do you feel like you have a place and did, like, people push you back, or like there is jealousy or things like that? And I think I was lucky enough that I never faced that in my whole career or my whole life, actually. I never feel that people are looking me as an Asian designer. They're just looking me as a Canadian designer, and that's it. And that is, I think, that I feel I was lucky enough to have that on me. But I think that, and the other thing is how you react to all these things too. I think that how you project yourself and how you want them to see you, I think that is the most important thing. So I think that, you know, I just be yourself, and people will perceive you that way, I guess.
Great. Amanda, what about you? Like, you know, doing some of your work, is it challenging? Do you get all the money? Huh? From all the, I say no money, but like, you know,
no,
researcher, usually they have money, no? Don't you have tons of money to do research?
No, research is the new R word, don't you know that?
So aside from money, what are the challenges in doing the type of research you want to do? Is there support?
Actually a really good question. I would start by agreeing with what Peter says, which is that for me the challenges tend to be very internal. And I often, because I work in public policy, I tend to pick areas that are important to me. And because they're important to me, I have to make sure that I'm not too invested. I need to be objective in order to do my job properly. And I'm amazed, actually, at how some of the projects have changed me. I've done some research where I went in with one headspace and I really fought with myself in order to maintain some objectivity. And at the end, I was convinced to another position. It's really interesting how that happens. So it's struggling with myself. It's also kind of some of what Andy was saying, which is figuring out how other people are seeing you at the same time that you're doing it. I find I get into sticky spots sometimes because I'm doing research with a group of people who are already marginalized, and how am I going to represent them when I'm not really part of that group? And it gets very complicated very fast. So there are those types of challenges, and I find that I really have to push myself to sort of grow as I'm encountering them.
Yeah. Min, you want to add something?
For me, challenges are like problems that need solving. So some challenges are easier to solve than others. And in my field, particularly in the path that I pursue as a visual artist, we constantly need to be innovative. And it's very similar to what Andy does as a fashion designer. Each year we need to produce something different that the curator and director would like, so they would show it in their galleries, and we may in turn earn some money from that. And that can get quite exhausting because you're constantly challenging yourself. You also need to be aware of what's out there, that you can make something different than what's out there. And of course, there's also the internal challenges as well, whether you're talented enough, whether you have the ability to keep constantly pushing every year. So, but it's solvable.
Thank you. Now, Andy, you mentioned that people look at you just as a designer rather than an Asian designer. But being Asian, do you think that actually influences your creativity, your design, your work? Or not at all?
Yes, I think it does. It does, because I think that we come from a very rich culture, and I think that everything's, it's hard to explain because that's come with age also and experience that is coming
to you. I'm not there yet.
But I think that, through the years, I don't know, people usually say that I have that kind of Asian kind of touch in there. But the only thing that I can think about it is was my grandmother, that who was a very elegant lady, and she still influenced me today. The way she dressed, the way she reacted, she moved and everything. So I think that is how influenced me when I design, and I always design for one typical that kind of ladies, that kind of woman. So I think that what, if I can say that, is if I have any influence from the Asian culture, is that what it is. I think with the feminine touch, everything has to be light, everything has to be flowing, and I think that what it is. I think that what I feel that I was influenced by that. Especially my grandma.
What about me?
Can you repeat the question?
Being Asian, does it influence the work that you do? Like I saw your art, the visual art. I do see some representation of Asian person. Is that part of your influence, or is there other way that being Asian Canadian influence your outlook, influence your process? And your product?
For me, I think that my childhood of growing up in the post-war period has influenced me quite a bit in terms of offering me a big fountain of inspirations that I can source from to create artwork or to write or many different approach, I guess. But interestingly enough, in my early body works, sculptures and drawings, other people see Asian sensibility in it, and they assume that I've been trained by other Asian professional, which in my case, I didn't. So it was interesting, for me, it's interesting to see how culture kind of seeped into a child mind or remembrance, and it got translated something to something else.
Great. Peter?
Yeah, I have a thought about this, and as we were preparing for the panel, I was thinking today about that exact question, like how has Asian culture maybe informed or affected my music? And I think it really has affected a lot, because I was, as I was describing my dad, you know, in a very traditional home, I was really trained slash brainwashed into being constantly concerned about what other people thought about me. And I think that has to do with face, you know, like maintaining your face and being aware of what people think about you and always aware of your reputation and, you know, how you're presenting yourself. And I think that even though I was born here, I still absorb that, and it's become a part of my character. And I have to say, in jazz, it's a real asset to have that skill, because you have to be able to improvise with the other people on the stage in the moment and be aware of everything that they're doing and how people are responding to each other in every second. And I think to be able to be tuned in like that, it's not very hard for me. So I think, I guess that's been a helpful influence of Asian culture, and being aware of harmony in your surrounding is something that I was totally brought up to be aware of that all the time. And I think in a band situation, it's also good psychologically, because you learn how to get along well with your band members and how to have a good rapport.
So you are very good with Tai Chi, the yin and the
yang. I love Tai Chi. I did study that.
Okay,
thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Paul, what about in your work? We haven't seen your sample of work, so please describe them to us.
Well, I'll talk about something I did early on when I was a student. You know, when, as a young person in high school, you know, I was fascinated with, you know, horror films and zombie movies. So I made one in high school. Nobody watched it, right? But, you know, I found that, you know, I was involved. I made actually an Asian rap video, and it actually went viral around the world. This is before YouTube and Twitter and all that stuff. But it made the national news. And what I found was that, you know, creating an artwork, and especially featuring Asian rappers, wasn't done before. And then basically really connected with a lot of youth out there around the world. So for the first time, they can see that, wow, us Asians, we could rap too. We can do it just as good, right? So I think that really touched a lot of people. And then I found that, yes, this is something that should be nurtured, and we should really promote Asian voices, and that we're capable of, you know, playing basketball, doing all sorts of things that everyone else can do. So our culture is really capable, and we're not just the nerd in school that will do other people's homework, you know, math homework, and we're not like the best at chess, or we all know kung fu, because everything you see in Hollywood is not true. So, you know, hopefully one day I want to continue, you know, making art that shows that Asians are just like normal people, like everyone else.
Well, you brought a very good point about, you know, representation. And of course, our specialists here have a lot of experience and a lot of research on representation. And I understand that you recently did a paper. Maybe you can just share some highlight, because the time is like running. So some highlight of your particular paper on representation.
I thought you'd never ask, William.
I promise you, so yes.
So we looked at 6 programs that were on the air in 2009. And I'll just briefly tell you what they are. The Border, Flashpoint, The Kink in My Hair, Little Mosque on the Prairie, Degrassi, Next Generation, and Being Erica, sorry. So we looked at those 6 programs, and we just did a qualitative analysis. So basically, looking at how many factors, but for the purposes of today, how diversity was represented in those shows. And what we found was, and I'm going to be emotional about it because I'm not writing the report right now, but what we found was so sad. It showed that there were lots of attempts to include diversity in different shows. And for example, there were some shows that entirely focused on a specific group, like The Kink in My Hair focuses on Black Jamaicans in Canada. So that's a good attempt. And Little Mosque on the Prairie focuses on Indian Muslims in some mythical prairie town. And those are good attempts. And however, there were many, many shows that didn't even... Oh, I shouldn't say many, many. There were shows that did not have visible minority representation, and certainly shows that did not have Asian representation or representation in a meaningful way. When we were looking at, I think it was The Border that had no visible minority representation at all. And Being Erica had 18 characters, 16 of them were white. And then, you know, there were some other shows that we looked at, and the Asians were all in from these shows that I'm talking about, the Asians were all in stereotypical roles. So all the roles that you can imagine and all the plot lines you can imagine, those are the types of roles that we were seeing there. And it was just, it's frustrating. It just shows that things have changed, and I was having a conversation with someone in the audience earlier. Things have definitely changed since the 80s and 90s when all the people making the media were white, male, middle class. Things are definitely different now, but we have a way to go.
What about the rest of the panel? What about you guys? Do you think that your art are being ghettoized except for Andy? Or do you think that you are totally embraced? Lots of opportunity open for you? Or do you feel that, you know, for certain issues, you know, people like to say, okay, we have to have some sort of safe environment to develop Asian artists? Or you think, nah, forget about that. I just want to go to the main stage. I want to be at the main gallery. Or what's your point of view?
My point of view on that one, well, I don't know. Like, I honestly, I never facing that people point at me as an Asian. So, you know, I never have that kind of feel. Even from school with friends, I surrounded by, well, if you call white people. But, I feel like I'd be a part of it, but I never resign who I am. I never, you know, I never say that, you know, I still eat Vietnamese food. I still, you know, I have to say that I love Asia and Paris by Night. I'm watching that. I know every song, every singer. You know, so I never resign anything of that. So I always bring them, you know, I always talk nicely about it. I never make fun of it. So I never have that kind of, like, people pointing at me that, oh, you're Asian and you come and steal my job or things like that. So I never faced that idea. So I never, honestly, sometimes I don't know how to react if that has happened to me. So that is, I never faced that racism that you feel. And yes, this was true when you look at all the TV show and the things like that. We're not represented as well. But I don't know. I don't know what to say about it in my point, because I never have that things, because even everywhere I go, the only face I have, every problem I have, because I never look my age, so that way people think that I'm much younger than who I'm supposed to be. But
that is not a problem, Andy.
Yeah, it's a problem when you go looking for a job. Yeah, but that is the only facing that I have, the problems that I have. But the end of it, like, I walk into the big store or like meeting like people to present my collection or talking with people, I never have that feeling that I said, oh, you know, we need to take the other guy. And I was kind of proud of it. I have that what I want, like, the young Asian believe in it, and just don't think that because you're Asian that you cannot do anything. In 2006, this has really happened to me, and I never think that really happened to me, because again, the same thing that you're just saying. In Toronto, choosing one out of Canadian designer to represent the World Fashion Award in LA, and we submitted like everybody else. And I would say, okay, in Toronto, the best known at that time, they called the Prince of Fashion, is Arthur Mendoza. And you have David Dixon, you have Lida Bade. And I just said, oh, you know what? I just put my name in it. And Kesera, you know, I just, like, for experience. And I was sure was Arthur Mendoza would choose, because he's, you know, just coming up. He had the support from everybody, from the he's a media darling in Toronto. And I said, wow, I come from Montreal, and we have a thing between Montreal and Toronto, right? So I never think that. And actually, when I received the phone call that I was chosen to represent Canada for that fashion award, I was like, scream out loud. I said, I can't just believe they choosing me over Dixon, David Dixon, and Arthur Mendoza. So I said, at the end of the day, that's why I said, you know what, you just doing what you believe in and put your heart on it. And, you know, your skin color, your name, everything, it disappear, because at the end, your work is count more than anything else, I guess.
That's great. On that note, you know what? I'm going to change career now, okay? Competition, watch out. Okay, quickly, anybody who wants to talk about this issue?
For me, as a visual artist, I actually encounter a lot of challenges as a Vietnamese Canadian. I've encountered situations in which my own professors in art, as well as artists, established artists, as identify, well, ask me questions right away. So what's it like living in the post-war period? What's it like living in the war? And why don't you make something about that? And I was really annoyed. And they kept pushing me, but I kept resisting. For one thing, it's very expensive to make a body of work that covers all that experiences. It's cheaper to write than to make art like paintings and sculptures. But I think going back to what you're saying earlier about representation, I think before we can attempt to encourage youth going to the arts, we need to re-examine the structures and system that's supporting the artist, that is governing the artist and promoting the artist's work. What Amanda was saying about the lack of Asian representation in show, well, I could say the same thing about visual arts. There has been no show about visual art on television, nor on radio. And when I first returned to Canada from Buffalo, New York, after being 3 years away from Canada, I started seeing everything differently. And the first thing for me to notice was like, how come the high school athlete received more attention on television than important Canadian artists who have won Governor General Awards? It doesn't make sense. So I think we need to... I think every single one of us in here, except the little ones over there, we have the power of votes. And we can encourage the lawmaker, the policymaker, to make changes. For instance, to give more money to CBC to start new programs on the arts and focus on the arts only. If there's a nature of things, I'm sure there's a nature of art.
Good point. So Paul, your comrade, also an advocate. What about you?
Well,
any point of view here?
In the Jane Finch area, it's often misrepresented in the media. So every time that something bad happens, they come in droves. And over the years, we have decades-old reputation of being a really bad neighborhood, probably one of the roughest neighborhoods in all of Canada. So me and a bunch of other friends were tired of this, and we're like, okay, why are we letting the media represent who we are? So we decided to make our own media. Hence, I made a website called janefinch.com. And we have our own little news division. We do documentaries, do short films. We interview some famous celebrities, too. There's nothing stopping you from doing what you want. There's a funny story. A couple years ago, I wanted to interview Maestro Fresh West. He's like one of the best-selling Canadian hip-hop artists in all of Canada. So, I mean, what's stopping you from contacting him and saying, hey, I want to do an interview? And I called him up. I'm like, I want to interview you. Do you want to come down? He actually drove all the way to Jane and Finch, and we shot it in my friend's basement. And that was pretty amazing, because someone like him would give us the time to, give us some airtime and help us. I mean, when I was there, I was a little bit shaking, right? But, there's nothing stopping you. I mean, we even interviewed some UFC heavyweight champions, and my friend was the interviewer. And at the end of the interview, Randy Couture, who's also in the new movie now with Sylvester Stallone, he took down my friend. They did a little match, and he got spanked on the butt. But, basically, you can do anything you want. You don't have to have money or resources or people telling you that you can't do it. You can just go out there and do it right now, and there's no need to wait.
Wow, Paul, you're going to be officially my agent. Peter?
I just wanted to weigh in a little bit. I just wanted to say in the jazz world, I have experienced no discrimination whatsoever, but I think it's a form of music where I think image is less important than the music. So I think that's one plus. But I have to say, I've experienced actually the opposite in jazz, because there are not too many Asian jazz vocalists out there. I don't really have any pressure on me. So it's kind of nice. It's extremely refreshing to be in a situation where I'm always exceeding people's expectations. You know what I mean? Especially with my background and my family.
No, but it's your talent, dear. It's your talent.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. But really, but I wanted to say about this, I think one of the main impediments, at least in jazz, and why not many, relatively speaking, Asian kids go into studying jazz music is because probably exposure as well as influence from parents. And I really want to encourage, if there's anybody here that are musicians of any kind, I really strongly encourage you to explore jazz because it's such a wonderful area of music to explore and express yourself and find your own individual voice. There are a lot of amazingly talented Asian musicians out there, but they just never considered checking out jazz.
Are you selling your CD after this? Anyway, give them your website. Okay, time is running out. We do have two microphones here. We can entertain a couple of questions. It's your chance. Please come toward the microphone, please. Yeah, the lady in red.
Hi, my name is Mayumi, and just wanted to know, like, a strong value for me is respecting elders, and there is pressure to take care of our parents that immigrated here. I don't want to seem like I'm crying, but those who aren't rolling in money, like, are you able to find meet these pressures of taking care of your parents financially, say, or...
Anyone want to take this? What's that about?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question again? I try to figure out my answer.
Take care of your parents financially. Are you prepared to take care of your parents financially? Are you...
Oh, yes. Do I prepare to take care of my parents financially? Is that what your question is?
I grew up with that kind of expectation that I was going to... I have to succeed, like make a lot of money to take care of my parents.
I understand with the culture that we have, that we have to. Yes, I do actually, because every month we still have to put money and send it back to give it to my grandmother so she can send it back to Vietnam to help some still related. I don't have any more relative there, but she does. She still does, so she still have sent money there. You know what? I still have my grandma is 95 years old now, and she still lives with my aunt. So the children still do taking care of their parents. I have an aunt now, and she only have one children, and then her daughter was moving away, live in London now, and it's like I'm only relative that she has in Montreal. So yes, I do taking care of her in that way. It means that you know, I come to see her every week. She comes to eat at my house every week. So I think, she's wealthy, so I cannot say that I taking care of her. But if something happened, yes, we do. I think that is the only thing that I think with good with Asian culture is we taking care of ourselves. We don't let you know people down. Yes, sometimes we do by obligation. I have to say that. Even we hate the people. You hate your uncle sit next to you, but you still have to send money to give him. Yeah, it's due. It's happened. It's just happened. But that's what's good about it, I think, because you have the obligation that you're not thinking only for yourself, but you're thinking for the people sit next to you, and you're thinking for the new generation come up to. So I think that gives them something to believe in, and I think that what I love. I never deny the Asian culture for that, because that our parents or my always teach us to share in that way, and I think that is good. It's good in that way.
Thank you. Well, I just want to have more questions. This is why I just let one of you answer. Okay, there's a lady over here.
A question for all the panelists. I'm wondering what real practical words of advice you might have for parents. Asian parents who find it very difficult to let go of the dream that their children will be doctors or lawyers or engineers. Like, they just, it's very difficult for them to let go of that, and yet their children are clearly passionate about some other creative career. What words of advice would you have for the parents?
So who have a good advice here? Come on. Come on. Yeah, take that. Take that.
I can say this because I see these parents in my practice and those poor kids. I have to say the thing that I guess what I would recommend is if you know people like this and you want to talk to them, is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah.
Is to really to talk to the parents about it openly and help them to see all the possibilities that are out there and why in Canada this is a really good thing to pursue versus maybe their ideas of what they came from maybe somewhere in Asia with a very different model of how things work, and understanding that this is an extremely important, advantage in pursuing your career by having passion and pursuing with all your heart. I think it's really trying to convince them that it's really worthwhile.
Thank you. This gentleman over here.
Hi. Question about policy, because I'm deeply disturbed at how there isn't representation of cultural diversity, you know, in the media. I mean, it's ridiculous. And from my standpoint, Canada is being misrepresented and Canadian society is being misrepresented. Are there any legal issues involved in that many of these programs are publicly funded? You know, ought there not be a certain requirement of a percentage of people, or are there any legal issues, or is it just a matter of somehow we have to wait for the industry to evolve? How does change take place? Because I think it's just deeply disturbing. Canada is not this way now. We are a different society.
I hear what you're saying. We have organizations like the CRTC, the CAB, the CBC, and the CRTC does have regulations so that that's the agency that gives out the licenses to the networks and the stations. So there are regulations in there that say you have to basically represent diversity in your stations and in your shows. And if you violate those regulations, then they have different things that they can do, like make you come forward for a public hearing or give you a short-term license instead of a 5 or 10 year license, that kind of thing. I think you're right. I mean, we've definitely found that you're right. One in five Canadians is a new Canadian, and a much higher percentage is visible minority. And that's definitely not what we're seeing on TV. What can we do about it? Well, we can ask that policies be strengthened. Like, it would be nice if CRTC had greater teeth to do stuff. A public hearing, I don't know how much stations are, a public hearing. I mean, I've never even heard of any public hearings happening, you know, to be honest. So I don't know what sort of teeth there are there. I think I would agree with what Min was saying earlier. I mean, we demonstrate with our votes and we demonstrate with our actions that we are unsatisfied with what we're seeing on TV, and that definitely at Media Action, that's what we do. I'd be happy to talk about this more with you if you want offline about sort of some of the actions that you can do.
Exchange card.
Thank you.
Oh, we'll take two more questions, one over here and one over here. Please.
Hi. I'm a mother and also, I want to be an artist, but at this moment, I don't have time because I have to look after my son and my mom and, my house or whatever. I have a few questions to ask you, but my son is now in Canterbury taking drama, and then he also composed, writes songs, and now he wants to be a psychologist like you, whatever. I told him, but you know, he had few choices. He said, you know, his girlfriend has, she's in music, and she now go off, and whether she will succeed, but 80% she will not succeed. But for him, he has few career choice. He can be a psychologist. He can be a psychiatrist. He can be a paramedic. He can be a kung fu. He has a secondary black belt jiu-jitsu. He can be an instructor. he can be a soldier, but now he crossed it out because I didn't want him to be a soldier. No, 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 I have only you. You cannot be a soldier. And he said, but then I argued with him. I came from Vietnam, a lot of war. I don't want you to go there. And then my husband just said to him, why do you want to be a soldier? You will be in Petagua and playing hockey all the time. And he crossed it out, you know. But anyway, he thought something exciting. So now, my advice to him. I said, okay, whatever you choose, I'm going to support you. For example, you want to go to Canterbury drama actor, I support you. You want to be a songwriter, I support you. You want to be psychologist, I support you. Whatever, I support you. Except a soldier, okay? And now we... don't say that to other people, you know?
Give us your question.
My question is this. This is my advice to him. I want you to have a job, a career, that you know you have a right livelihood. That means you being a lawyer or being a doctor may not be a right livelihood, because if you just want to make money on people and people hate you, lawyer can be a liar, and doctors in the U.S., somebody hate them. Second, you have to be to like your job, because if you don't like your job, you will be a slave. You will be very unhappy, because I see some people who are very unhappy. They hate their job, but they cannot quit it. Third, you have to make money, because I'm not around to support you anymore. You know, that's the three things I told my sons. My son, is this correct advice? This is the artist. Second, this is personal. Are you happy with your job? And are you married or you have a family and you're happy? How do you juggle between jobs and family and personal life?
Wow, that's loaded question.
That is a long question.
Out of you two, Min and Paul, which one of you want to answer this?
What was the question? not married. I like girls. But most importantly is that you do have to make certain sacrifices. I mean, if you're going to bring a child into this world, that's going to eat up a lot of chunk of your time. And you have to be prepared. So you say that you have no time to pursue, you know, a newfound passion. Well, I mean, unfortunately, that's the reality. Either you can try to squeeze in the time or, you know, think about it in advance and be sure, like, okay, maybe I can hold off having a family for a while and pursue this passion. So you're going to have to really make some decisions. There's only 24 hours in the day. I mean, it's still a lot of hours, but, you know, when you add mouths to feed and other responsibilities, it does cut it away slowly. So you really have to determine what's most important to you and what will make you happy. So that's why I'm
You are happy. Are you happy? That's what she asked. Are you happy?
Me?
Yeah, right now, because I have a lot of time and I can... And because I don't have children, I can dedicate a lot of my time to, you know, doing my community work and also, you know, pursuing arts and doing all kinds of things. So, you know, at this point, it's been really good.
Thank you. Last question, you two.
Hi. What do you enjoy most about, like, your career?
That's a good question. I mean, what you most enjoy in talking about your career?
It's the process of art making. Because it's, I don't know how to describe it really. this process of art making, it allowed me to synthesize different thoughts, different knowledge that I learned, different techniques about art making that I've read about and want to explore. And the end product is something that is kind of distill all of that. Like the pictures outside, the drawings outside.
They're awesome.
It's a project that been ongoing for 5 years. And this is the first time I actually put it on paper. What inspired that project is, first of all, it was back in 2005. I was on the bus, and I heard the news that... I forget her name. The black activist died. The one who was on the bus, but Rosa Parks, that's it. Thank you. Yes, I heard her news in the morning that she died. I, w- I took the bus to work, and I look around, and I was just amazed to see how colorful the bus,
stops
are the people. Because in my field, we have to learn the artworks of past artists. And this one artist, his name is Honoré Daumier. He's a French artist. And he did a series of bus, of people on the bus. And the people represent the culture that he was in, which is French. And for me, it was the opportunity to translate what I see, while at the same time make a dialogue with his past work to represent the current culture and society that we live in.
Thank you. Now, due to time, I just want to ask each panelist to leave us with just one word of inspiration for all of us. Just one word. So, popcorn style.
Literally one word.
I'll go first. For me, the most important is to have a sense of humor. We don't have the whole night. Hello, please.
We didn't expecting that question. I think for me would be respect, I think. If you respect yourself and you respect each other, I think that would can bring you very far.
And this kind of carry on what Andy just said, and that is recognition. It's wonderful to be recognized for whatever task you do, and especially in the arts, because we sacrifice so much. And to receive recognitions, even from your friend, the kind of work that you do, that's wonderful.
I'm going to say my word is love.
Aww.
Really. And I think it binds us all, it connects us all, and when we're, and I think the arts and music have something really important to say about how to feel it and express it.
Does it have to be one word?
I would say you can't be it if you can't see it. So be the difference that you want to see. That's what I believe.
Last but not least.
Peter stole my answer. But, you know, with love, I mean, when you're releasing honest, pure, and positive energy, you'll get that energy back. And what I can say is that, you know, just be yourself. And if you are who you truly are, people will accept who you are, and they'll learn to love you back, and they'll appreciate you. You don't have to be anyone else. You don't have to wear a mask. So be who you really are. You know, embrace your own culture, share it with the world, and we'll make it a better place together.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. That concludes this part of the panel, but it is Asian Heritage Month. There's still a lot of activity. There's a special gala June 2nd. Tickets are available. Please come, okay, see the show. And I would like to thank you all for staying, and I hope you all took notes. If not, we'll write something on the website and send it to you. And I will please invite Lulu and Nook back to give us some closing remark. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is fun. Can you guys hear me? Thank you so much, William, and all of our panelists, Amanda, Andy, Paul, Min, and Peter. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot from you tonight, and I hope everyone here has picked up something as well.
Alors, merci à William et à tous nos panélistes. Vous nous avez beaucoup appris aujourd'hui. Et pour ma part, je trouve que votre travail dans les arts va aider à rendre la communauté asiatique au Canada beaucoup plus diverse et intéressante. Merci.
And we just want to thank all of you for staying. Just to reiterate what William had said, thank you so much for staying until the end. It's a long Tuesday, but thank you. We already mentioned there's the gala is being hosted by Ottawa Asian Heritage Month Society. And Peter, if you want to give a wave, Robert, if you want to give a wave, he'll have some tickets available if you're interested.
Alors, merci à tous d'être venus ce soir. William et Loulou ont mentionné, alors on aura un gala pour terminer les célébrations du mois du patrimoine asiatique. Ça aura lieu le 2 juin au Musée de la Civilisation. Et c'est M. Robert Yip de Ottawa Asian Heritage Month Society qui pourra vous donner les billets. Et merci à tous. Et puis, nous vous souhaitons un bon retour à la maison. Et maintenant, j'aimerais inviter nos invités à prendre une photo de groupe avec nous ici on stage. Je vais inviter le photographe Hongley.
So we're going to take a picture.